This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. In our Health and Living segment, of course, we're talking about COVID-19, the outbreak. And today's angle is more about cancer. Now, if you have cancer in the midst of this outbreak and its rapid spread here in Malaysia, is probably a source for constant anxiety for many of us. Dr. Muralidharan Munisamy, Medical Director at the National Cancer Society, is on the phone with me. He's going to help us, guide us through what people with cancer need to know about going for treatment and how to stay safe at home during the outbreak. Welcome to the show, Dr. Murali. How are you today?
Hello. I'm as well as we all can be, I suppose.
Yeah.
A lot of anxiety and worry. My wife, for example, works in the front line every day. So even though I'm not on the front line, it's really very concerning for all of us.
Yeah. How are you coping with that?
By actually coming to work. So we're still at work. The society is fully functioning as well. So that helps to kind of take the mind off the worry, I suppose.
Yeah. And what's the situation like for you at the National Cancer Society, Malaysia? Are people coming forward for more help? What's the situation like over there?
Okay. So, of course, we're a half and half. So we're an essential service in terms of our clinics, which continue to do a lot of diagnostic work, and the Children's Home of Hope, which continues to care for children who are being treated for cancer. But really, our other kind of administrative functions have all been shut down. So basically, only the clinical side is really working. And of course, our cancer information service, in terms of our online and phone counseling and psychology services, that's really become busy over the past couple of days, understandably. So again, there's a lot of confusion. A lot of people are just unclear on what to do.
Yeah. And could you be a little bit more specific about some of your concerns as cancer patients?
So something as simple as quite a lot of people, and rightly so, are worried about whether they should even come to the hospital at all. These may be people who are receiving their medication, or even people who are on follow-up treatments. We've even had calls from people who are scheduled for radiotherapy or chemotherapy. So some of them are wondering whether they should come. Some of them have been called by the hospital to reschedule their appointments at a future date, at which, I mean, they have no idea when those dates are going to be. So they're concerned on whether, you know, this is going to impact their treatment, their outcomes. And of course, there's also a lot of mental anxiety associated kind of issues with people. Do they go out? Do people with cancer, is it even okay for them to go out to shop?
Yeah. So is it safe to go to the hospital for treatment?
So this is it's a very difficult question. So I'm going to share with you just this one paper from JAMA Oncology, which just literally hot off the presses. It came out 25th of March, and it's of course from the only area in which there's a huge number of cases, and now that things are resolving. Quite a lot of data is coming out from there, from China. So this is from Wuhan, and it's a study of about 1,500 over patients in Wuhan. And what this study found was, in the infection rate of COVID-19 for cancer patients was about double that of a normal person. So and what's a little more concerning as well is that fewer than half of those patients, of those cancer patients who picked up COVID-19 in Wuhan, were actually on active treatment. So it's not only those people who are on active chemotherapy or radiotherapy, really generally anyone who had cancer had a much, much higher risk of picking up COVID-19.
Meaning they were in remission? Yeah.
So, our thoughts were that people who were in, those who were in remission as well. So, irrespective of whether they were in remission or they were in active treatment, they still actually had a much, much higher risk.
Okay. And which is a double. The infection rate was double amongst this group of people.
Yep.
Half of that, the cohort.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, so the infection rate for this group was about 0.79%, while for the average person in Wuhan was only about 0.37%.
Right.
So it was about 2.3 times, actually.
Okay. What else were some of the findings?
There's another paper which was out on Valentine's Day that looked at quite a lot of people across China. Is about this is a larger cohort, about 2,000 over cases, and it also had a worrying kind of finding where people who were cancer patients who had COVID-19 were more likely to have a severe event compared to people who didn't have cancer. A severe event, they had it down as ICU admission, or they needed ventilation, artificial ventilation, or actually the risk of dying. So that was for overall for cancer patients. And here, slightly differing than this, the JAMA paper, where they found that those who had chemotherapy or surgery in the past month actually had a higher risk of severe events compared to those who did not. So what these papers are showing us is the signal is pointing to really an increased risk of COVID-19, of picking up COVID-19 among cancer patients, irrespective of whether they are actively in treatment or those who are even in remission. And if you are a patient with active cancer, you're having active treatment, if you do pick up COVID-19, the data showing us that it's more likely that you'll have a severe event compared to people who didn't. So rightly so, this now puts a very big question onto us, is who do we ask to come to hospitals? Should we even ask these people to come to hospitals?
And is it purely because they are immunocompromised?
It's going to be largely due to that.
Okay. So has the National Cancer Society Malaysia actually made a decision? So how are you counselling these patients with some of these questions, you know, lingering at the back of your mind?
Okay. So what we've done is we have consulted with the Ministry of Health. And in tandem with what the Ministry of Health is currently doing, along with kind of the guidance from ASCO, the American Society of Clinical Oncology, just like the big kind of body which gives us quite a lot of direction, like clinically. Mm-hmm. What the thoughts are is that first, elective procedures which can be pushed off should really be pushed off. So, for example, if a cancer patient was going to get on a colostomy bag, okay, who was going to go for a colostomy reversal, for example, those are not so urgent procedures. For these kind of procedures, rightly so, the Ministry of Health is doing that as well. And when patients ask us, we're sharing with them as well, that these are procedures that can be put off.
That's difficult, isn't it? Trying to decide which ones actually need to be pushed off.
Very true,
especially,
I think very individual as well.
Yeah, especially in the area of cancer, especially.
Yeah, because that's the very next point that I'm going to make, which is at the same time, the urgent cancer surgeries have to continue going on, and that's going to be a challenge because just again sharing with you kind of the map of the bigger hospitals that have been put aside as admission centers for COVID-19 have if you look through the list, so there's the screening hospitals, the kind of smaller hospitals which are able to screen for COVID-19, but only really the larger big tertiary referral centers are the ones that are admitting COVID-19 patients. And unfortunately, these are also the hospitals where most of the more the bigger cancer treatment centers are as well.
I mean, UMMC being one example, isn't it? It's one of the public hospitals that's designated for testing and treating COVID-19.
What's happening for these hospitals is they're actually retooling as in they are being converted to largely cater for COVID-19 patients, with all other patients kind of being put on hold temporarily. But as I understand from the surgical service, efforts are now being made to actually transfer patients with urgent cancer surgeries to, I don't know the term to use, is cleaner hospitals. Yeah. Hospitals which basically are not this kind of admitting centers for COVID patients. So so that's being worked on now. So I don't think it's really this epidemic, this pandemic is something that we've all not been able to cope with. But what's good is we've all hit the ground running, and every day there's we're making changes. So for those who need urgent cancer surgeries, efforts are being made. And whenever possible from our side, we also, like I said, when patients call us with these kind of concerns, we try to do a little bit of navigation for them, in the sense that if there are patients that can be pushed onto the private sector, either through financial assistance or via the use of their insurance, then we are navigating them out of these hospitals at this point in time.
Okay, I'm very curious. You spoke about the JAMA findings in Wuhan. What did they do? How did they cope with the cancer patients? What was their strategy?
Oh, so at that point in time, everything came to a halt. So in that highly endemic area that Wuhan was,
yeah,
they postponed any kind of even adjuvant chemotherapy at that point in time. What they do recommend is we need to, actually one of the recommendations actually is to have separate centers which don't treat COVID-19, and that's what we're working towards here as well, to kind of put out areas in which people are screened very aggressively, and then when they're okay, you put them and undergo cancer surgeries in that setting. Interestingly, the British kind of guidelines has also come out, I think, about 2 or 3 days ago from the Royal Colleges. And they are asking to stop completely things like endoscopy, laparoscopic procedures, unless and only if the patient has been really confirmed to be COVID negative. Because what we're also finding out is a lot of these surgical procedures actually increase tremendously the risk of transmissibility of COVID-19 to the operating surgeons and to the anesthesiologists, basically the entire team.
Being in that hospital environment.
Yeah.
Okay.
Being in that hospital environment.
Yep. Okay.
Yep.
Wow. That's quite a lot to think about. Question is, elective procedures that can be pushed off. We'll come back and find out more about what it is. I mean, we're talking about cancer in particular. And if that is going to, if elective procedures that can be pushed off is the way we're going to go as well, how will that affect a patient's condition, a cancer patient's condition, if they delay? Will the cancer spread or will there be a recurrence with this delay, because we don't know how long this virus is going to be around? We'll come back and find out more up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Muralidharan Munnisamy, a medical director at the National Cancer Society Malaysia, on the phone with me. We are discussing cancer and COVID-19. This is a group of people who are highly immunocompromised, and in this sort of situation where there's a pandemic, they become terribly vulnerable or susceptible to contracting the virus. As Dr. Murali spoke about earlier, based on a JAMA study in Wuhan, infection rates doubled with cancer patients in Wuhan during COVID-19. And of that, fewer than half who picked it up. Can you continue that for me?
Yeah, we're actually active patients. So irrespective of whether you are a patient, a cancer patient in active treatment, or even if you've had cancer previously, your risk seems to be equally high as well.
Okay, so whether remission or not, your risk was very much higher. So then the question is, if a patient actually needs a procedure, whether or not it's surgery or chemotherapy, what do you actually do? And the your Valentine's Day study, I'm not terribly sure, where was that? Was it Wuhan as well, Dr. Murali?
No, that was actually a wider Chinese study. So it included quite a lot of other regions in China as well, in Lancet Oncology.
Ah, okay. That was a Lancet one. Fantastic. So they're suggesting that elective procedures should be pushed off and urgent surgeries only should carry on. However, you also mentioned in the UK, they are considering not doing any sort of surgery unless absolutely required. Even, as you said, minimally invasive surgeries, only because the surgeons are exposed to the hospital environment where this very, very infectious virus is lurking all over the place. So what happens then? If you are going to delay treatment, whether it's chemo or surgery, what happens, Dr. Murali? Because we know in the past, when you are diagnosed, you're always told to immediately deal with the situation. In this case, we're now saying you need to delay it. What are the consequences of that?
Okay, so just perhaps to kind of go back a little bit. So in terms of elective surgeries and urgent surgeries, I don't think there's really a change in the management, okay? In the sense that if you are being diagnosed with cancer and you need to urgently go for surgery, I don't think that there should be any change to that. And there has been, I think, a bit of concern both in the public sector and in the private sector, but in the sense that some patients' surgeries have been pushed off, rescheduled for the time being. So necessarily they are worried, but really efforts are being made to kind of get those surgeries underway as soon as possible. And it's exactly for the reason that you're saying, because what we do not want to do is push these surgeries off so long that the patients actually get upstaged. They actually get worse. So that's something that everyone, both sectors are trying to do their best to kind of work on settling these urgent surgeries. Now, as to elective surgeries, so what is an elective surgery, which is exactly what you're saying, really is something that you need to kind of consult with your physician. Again, this is going to be quite challenging because in many cases, it's the physicians are unavailable for face-to-face.
Yep.
Quite a lot of people are rightly so concerned whether they should be turning up to the hospital at all to even meet with their surgeon or their oncologist. And the good news is almost everyone in the private sector has moved to kind of teleconsulting. In the government sector, there is a little bit of challenge to get that particular oncologist or that particular surgeon, but you're always welcome to go through the units themselves, the clinics, and whenever they can't get through, you're always welcome to call us at the National Cancer Society through one of our navigators will kind of set up a session to kind of resolve your issue if it needs to be in the public sector.
I'm very curious, Dr. Murali. I mean, this is a situation that's unprecedented. What about medico-legal issues when this whole situation blows over? And I mean, but given the situation, can you actually pursue or go down the path of medico-legal, taking someone to court because you didn't do surgery for me, or you know the advice wasn't clear enough when I spoke to you online and had a Skype conversation? I mean, how does that work? Do we even know?
Oh, to be honest, I don't think we have any idea. I don't think there's any kind of precedent that's been set really over this issue at all. What I can say is, and really, I think this has this. More so than any other time, has really shown how much the medical, or the, actually not even the medical, the healthcare fraternity has actually come out to put their lives on the line for everybody else. I don't think that any doctor is going to say, look, let's not do surgery, you know, because it may be risky for me. If anything, I think the concern is really on, as always, and as it should be, is for the patient. And so it's weighing the risk of whether that procedure that you're going to come in to do, okay, is going to be outweighed by the risk of you picking up COVID-19. And now that we're knowing that the risk of you getting COVID-19 is so much higher as a cancer patient, and as well as the risk of you getting a severe kind of outcome of that infection of COVID-19 since you're a cancer patient, will have to come into the contextual kind of decision-making. All this said and done, if it is an urgent cancer surgery, which is for removal or even actually chemotherapy, radiotherapy, the advice, the direction that has come down and is still likely being followed is to actually move on, which is to get it done and continue.
So for cancer patients who are home during this movement control order, well, that's a challenge for just about everyone. I cannot imagine, you know, how pertinent it is for cancer patients to stay well while they're home. What are some of the ways that they can do that?
Okay, a couple of things, actually. The first is, and I just want to get this in, a lot of people have appointments or kind of recall to the pharmacy to get medication. You know, their repeat medication, whether be it for continued chemotherapy or maintenance chemotherapy, or even sometimes even supplements and all that. Now, my real advice is whenever possible, okay, there's three things that they can do. First is switch to getting it posted to them. University of Malaya has already switched almost all their patients to that. If you go onto the UM website or you call the UM clinics, they will do that for you. Most of the other government centers are now converting to it as well if you aren't already on it. The third thing that you can do is, in order, if you need to really go and collect your medication with a prescription, really just ask someone who can do it for you, if they could do it for you. Which actually brings me to kind of the next point for cancer patients. If you can, seriously, the MCO is perhaps designed extensively for the safety of cancer patients, be they active patients or patients who have kind of completed treatment. So if you are a patient, a cancer patient, I really would advise you to not step out. I would advise you to perhaps get somebody to do your shopping for you and really keep all the surfaces in your house as sterile as you can without kind of coming into contact with any possible individual that may kind of give you the risk of picking up COVID-19. It's compounded if you're a patient on active treatment. If you're a patient on active treatment, if it is possible, I would actually advise that you stay in an isolated room with little or no contact or with anyone else in the household. Treat it as though that your room is a sterile environment and have as minimal contact as you can with someone outside so that people who are coming to see you in the room, I mean, then they really sanitize like they're going into another environment and then when they're coming out as well. So really minimize contact.
And what about nutrition and physical activity during this period?
I would think both of those components are important, but not important enough for you to actually step out of your house for physical activity, for example. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of, and these are things that we're doing as well as sharing with continuously with us and with the Ministry of Health and other agencies on what are the possible like physical activity that you can do even from your couch or from your chair without even needing to move out from your room. Now, in terms of nutrition, I think that will be one of the big challenges because we're starting to see, even though the government assures us that we will have continued supply of food and vegetables And I think they are quite right in that. But you might see some kind of drop in say, vegetable supply in terms of variety. So I would advise people to start getting a little creative and ensuring that, you know, whatever it is, your daily fruit and vegetable intake remains at the most optimum that you can keep it. Sure, eating cabbage 500 days in a row might be boring, but yeah.
But supplements, there are always supplements, Dr. Murali, especially during a time like this. Would you say supplements will play a big role?
I come from the school of thought that supplements should always be prescribed to people who have deficiencies. And so if they have documented deficiencies, by all means, I think supplements will really help as well. But nothing really beats, natural intake.
There's a lot of so-called advice that's circulating on social media. One of it is high doses of vitamin C will help protect cancer patients from being infected. Now, what are your thoughts on that?
So I just want to kind of go back into where this myth is coming from. So what's happening is in China, again, because really almost all this data is coming out of China, no one else has got documented evidence on this scale. In certain small numbers of patients who were really ill with COVID-19, these are admitted patients in hospitals, in ICU care, they used large doses of IV vitamin C. And it is, again, hearsay that, you know, some of it really helped with the patient's kind of recovery. Now, are these very clearly documented trials? No, the evidence is not strong at all. But even having said that, these were very specifically ill patients in an ICU setting with intravenous vitamin C. Should everyone else be taking oral high-dose vitamin C in the hope of not getting COVID-19? No, I don't think it works. But then I don't know whether you noticed that people like to jump on this easy fix. We always believe in an easy fix. So since Donald Trump kind of advocated the use of hydroxychloroquine, which again, now only is going into a testing kind of setting, a lot of people across the world have actually overdosed. Some people have died taking hydroxychloroquine.
And so, what is that? Could you elaborate a little?
So, again, coming out of various settings, including in France now, there are small studies in which they are using this old malarial drug. It's a very old drug. It's hydroxychloroquine. And you use it actually in some settings now still to treat rheumatoid arthritis. So even in Malaysia, there's patients who are on this. There's a little bit of, low-grade evidence to show that it seems to be efficacious in treating COVID-19 patients. So there's people in Africa, there's a couple of deaths reported as well of people who this thing has become popular since Donald Trump announced it in a press conference. And people have actually taken the drug and died.
I'm going to say this, and I have to say this. I wish Donald Trump would say nothing about COVID-19. I mean, he thinks the U.S. Lockdown is a beautiful timeline, which is not based on data and which is not based on any sort of scientific backing. So anti-malarial drugs, well, I would say stay away from it for now, wouldn't you say, Dr. Murali?
Yes, I would. And I'm happy to share that I don't think that's the case because there's colleagues of ours in the pharmaceutical industry who've been sharing on other channels that so many people are calling them up for these drugs already.
Okay.
Right.
So don't experiment, please. Okay. How is palliative care being provided during this time?
I actually have, I know that Dr. Ednin and the team at Hospice Malaysia continue to try their best to provide palliative care services. I think, it's really something that they're doing beyond the call of duty because they are actually going to be sending people into homes and putting those practitioners at risk. But I think they're trying their best to actually put out the service. And it that goes on as well.
Okay. What about cancer screening services? Has that been affected, like mammograms and pap smears and all of that?
Okay, so I don't think that is good news. But the good news is, in terms of us, that's one area in which there is clear direction. And the direction is, don't do screening. Every large organization in the world, including the government organizations, ministries globally, have come back to tell us, look, don't do screening. The kind of benefits of doing screening at this point in time is far outweighed by the huge risks of actually spreading the disease within the community or actually picking it up from the healthcare practitioners to actually go and do the screening.
Okay, so that's very clear.
It's a big no-no.
Okay.
Yeah. However, it's always these things, it's always the however, right? If you have symptoms, or for example, there's a growth, you feel there's a lump and all that, that really is an issue of early diagnosis. So by all means, come in.
So you can. Okay. So if there are symptoms, then your advice is to come in.
Yes.
Okay.
And get tested.
Sure. You mentioned earlier on in the show that patients are calling the National Cancer Society, speaking to the counselors. What sort of emotional anxieties are they actually experiencing during this period, Dr. Murali?
Okay, so just kind of aggregated information that I'm sharing. Like I was saying, a lot of people are anxious to know whether, you know, their treatment's going to be affected if they don't have this medication for a period of time. Some people are really depressed because now on top of everything, they're being locked in their houses and really not being allowed to come out at all. So that's another big area of complaint. And the third is actually the set of people whose surgeries are being delayed or even radiotherapy is being delayed. They rightly so are really concerned on whether there could be a risk of the disease coming back.
How do you support them on the phone? How do you help them through? And how many people do you have working at these call centers to help them?
Okay, so our call center, and do you mind if I share the number?
Yes, please.
It's 1-800-88-1000. That's 1-800-88-1000. It's a toll-free line, works all across Malaysia, and it does it in Tamil, Bahasa Malaysia, English, and Mandarin. So it's staffed by three groups of people. The first set of people are actually oncology-trained nurses. And the second is there's trained counselors. And now we also have a clinical psychologist. So in addition to kind of navigating, as I was saying, some people just don't know where to go. They need to find alternatives for buying medication and all that. We run those. We provide that kind of help as well. But really, if you have a mental health issue, which is specific to cancer, then our clinical psychologists or our counselors actually come in to run sessions with you online.
Okay, that's fantastic to know. Is there anything else you'd like us to, you would like to sort of bring to the fore so that there's some kind of awareness?
I think that people really need to be a lot more careful with stepping out, especially those who are having cancer and especially their caregivers as well, because it's kind of nice for me to, at this point in time, highlight how caregivers need to be especially as careful as the patients that they're caring for. Because if you pick up COVID-19, the person that you're caring for who has cancer is almost certainly going to either pick it up or suffer the huge consequences of you not being there to care for them.
So if you need support from the National Cancer Society, do give them a call. It's a toll-free number, 1-800-88-1000. Thank you so much, Dr. Murali, for joining us today.
Thank you, as always, for having us on.
Dr. Murali Dharan Munisamy, Medical Director at the National Cancer Society Malaysia, speaking to us about cancer and COVID-19 on Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.